This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What is up, Lead Singer Syndrome listeners? I am Shane. Here we are again, back for another episode of the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. Right now, I'm just hanging out in Germany. Silverstein is on tour over here. We're doing a bunch of festivals. It is a beautiful day. I love Europe in the summer. It is so, so amazing. Also, if you're a fan of Silverstein, we're coming to Australia super, super soon. Next month, we'll be there with Pierce the Veil and Beartooth. Silvertooth what? So lots coming up. Also, stay tuned. More touring news on the Silverstein front. We are going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff for the rest of the year. Some other stuff I can't even talk about yet. So very, very exciting time for Silverstein. And also, you know, I have my side project, River Oaks, which I'm starting to do more and more stuff with. Writing some tunes. Going to be playing some shows later in the year, which is going to get announced at some point. So stay tuned for that as well. Anyways, thanks for tuning in. Last week was a great episode with Joel from Big as an Ocean. Today we have another great episode with also just an amazing person. I really talk him up a lot in this, and I really kind of, it sounds almost like I'm sucking up to him a little bit, but it's interesting, man. I had a lot of people email me saying, you got to get Garrett Russell of Silent Planet on the show because he is such an interesting story. And I'll admit, I had heard of the band. I knew they were a Tooth and Nail band, Solid State Records, but I didn't know much about them. So I was like, you know what? Let's dive into it. Let's do a little research. And what I found was pretty miraculous and pretty inspiring. You know, I'm older, and I'm 35 now, and a lot of my favorite bands are bands that like formed in the 90s or the early 2000s. And a lot of newer bands, I feel like they just missed the mark for me personally. And it's nothing against them at all. But this band, Silent Planet, is really doing something unique. Lyrically, they're referencing all this interesting literature, all this stuff. I don't want to get too much into it now because Garrett talks a lot about it in the podcast. But really, really just an interesting band. Very different. Very unique. It's just great to see a newer band doing such amazing stuff. Before we jump in, as always, I want you to know you can get in touch with me very, very easily. Actually, Facebook. Facebook is back. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to respond to the old messages. So please, check out our Facebook page. I believe it's facebook.com/leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. That's the same with Twitter, @leadsingersyn. We got an Instagram, @leadsingersyndrome. If all this social media stuff is too fancy for you, we have old-fashioned email, which is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. If you like the show, remember, we've got 35 past episodes. They're all pretty good. They're all similar. And you don't have to start at the beginning or anything. Just jump in, dive around, try to get to all of them, because I think there really is something for everyone on this podcast. Also, if you like the show, we have the Amazon affiliate link, which is a great way for us to cover some of our costs. It really is easy. All you got to do is, if you buy anything on Amazon at all, go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It'll take you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as you normally would, and anything you buy on Amazon, from batteries to condoms to electronics to, hey, maybe a diamond ring for your girlfriend. It is summertime. I don't know. Whatever you buy, we get 4%, and it all adds up. So please check that out, leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. Costs you absolutely nothing. Also, before I forget, I am now on Snapchat. I've just had it for a little while. I'm actually really enjoying it. At first, I thought it was stupid, but it's actually really cool. And being in Europe and stuff, I'm putting all this stuff on my stories. And, you know, we're going to all these crazy European sites where there's, like, beaches, and I found an old graveyard. So check me out on Snapchat. It is @RealShaneTold. Thanks again. As always, if you like the show, tell a friend. That's all for the intro. Thanks again for listening. Here it is. My conversation with the amazing Garrett Russell of Silent Planet.
I've fallen!
Side!
feel, but some delusions never pass. So I took shelter in the woods with the naked shaking case. Deciduous fraternal twins.
Hey, what's up, Shane?
Hey, man. How are you?
Doing well. Sorry about that. Somehow my phone got on Do Not Disturb, and the whole day I've been like, calls have been going straight to voicemail, and I've been like kind of frustrated.
That
and
happened
now that
to
makes
me.
Sense.
Yeah, that totally that happened to me before one time, just randomly, like, you know, like the age of the butt dial. It's like with the iPhones
the
and stuff.
Age
it's
of
like
the butt dial.
It's kind of over. You know, the age of the butt dial. However, sometimes you're just holding your phone in your hand, and you know, accidentally you click something or whatever, and that totally happened to me once. And I like the whole day I was like, "What's going on?" You know, and
you know,
there it is.
I'm with you there. I think that perhaps our new fascist leader Donald Trump will usher in an era where the butt dial is no longer like he'll actually create a new era, and there's no room for like the era of Donald Trump and the era of the butt dial.
No,
so,
I think
I'm
that's,
into that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd vote for him just for that reason alone, right there, man.
Right.
No, I will not vote for him. No, I will not vote for Donald Trump. Know, no,
I
well,
was,
I'm Canadian anyways. I don't get a vote, so.
I don't know if we're already recording, but this is actually a question I was going to ask you.
Yeah, it's rolling. It's always rolling, dude.
Awesome. Always rolling. Every moment. Do you have like cool telemarketer people hitting you up and they're like, hey, buddy. And you're like, hey, man, you're on my show. Does that happen? That'd be cool.
That's funny. No, I just always when I call somebody, I hit record before they answer. Because sometimes the first thing you talk about is like people think it's off the record and it ends up being like the most honest, you know,
totally.
Part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you talk for 5 minutes and then it's like, okay, are we going to like roll now? It's like, okay. And people are like,
oh, totally.
You know? So I always just keep it rolling and whatever. And, I can't tell you how many times I've done interviews where I like, wasn't sure if it was on. Like, I had a really funny one once where I called into like this radio show and it was like live radio. And I was like, okay, I'm on the air. Like, he's talking like a radio guy, and he was, like, telling me these, like, problems about his, like, girlfriend and, like, these things he's going through.
Oh,
so
wow.
So I'm giving him, like, the, like, you know, like, the more entertaining radio answers. You know what I mean? And then
then
he's like, we talked for, like, 10 minutes. He's like, all right, man, you ready to, like, jump on the air? I'm like, okay. Like, I apologized after. I was like, I wouldn't have said that to you, like, dude to dude. You know, I'm saying it like as an entertaining, like morning
as
radio.
An entertainer, totally.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So it's funny how that stuff happens, but no, it's rolling, and who knows? Maybe this will be kept in there. Probably will. But,
well, and it's funny how I mean I think for some folks they might be kind of curious how it actually happens. You know, for instance, like you and I have never met, so there's this like interesting component of like. Kind of meeting and starting the interview at the same moment, you know?
Right. There's always a little bit of like breaking the ice, you know, because I only know what I know about you through like what I've read and researched, and you know, and you might know nothing about me. I have no idea. So it's an interesting dynamic. You're right. And like a lot of times I do these, I'm just cold calling somebody, and some of them are my friends. And that's always like a little easier, when
of
we have
course,
history,
of course.
but sometimes it's actually better to have somebody you don't know because I don't know, there's no preconceived notions and at all, you know?
No, totally. Like, you know, right now I might've actually meant all that and been like a huge Donald Trump supporter. And you're like crossing your fingers. You're like, what's the deal? And my question for you actually was going to be about Donald Trump. You see, everyone my age is saying like, we're actually going to move to Canada. You know?
Yeah. I hear it all. I hear it every day.
As a Canadian, I'm just kind of curious, you know, like, A, do you think they're going to do that? And B, do you think they're going to find what they're looking for?
The most hilarious thing to me is that Americans just assume they can just come to Canada. Like, it's a different country, you know? It doesn't work like that. You can't just say, yeah, can I have a Canadian passport, please? And Canada goes, oh, sure, here you go. Like, it's not that simple,
I think that's definitely American exceptionalism / imperialism at play right there.
Yeah.
We're just like, hey, we can go into there, right? Because you're like our little brothers, right?
Right. Well, by the same token, like, I can't come to America. I can't get an American passport or live like, geez, you're from California, Los Angeles? Man, I would love to live in Los Angeles. I can't. I'm not allowed. It doesn't work like that.
No, it's always, I'm sure it's been an interesting component of the Silverstein career to figure out America, because we had a Canadian in our band for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And that was a very tricky component for us. One time he was definitely overstaying, I think, his thing. And we had to like get him home, and we were really freaked out if when we like went through Canada and back into America, if he would ever come back with us. But it worked out anyways. And he's not with us anymore, but that's still a component that we try to help him with because we're still close friends. And he's actually trying to live in LA. Funny you say that.
Yeah. No,
where do you live in Canada?
I live in Toronto.
Okay, cool. He's in Toronto as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's nice. Yep. That's where I
love
live.
Toronto. Only been there once, but it was very cool. And it is, I believe, like the intellectual capital of the world, a lot of people are saying.
Really? I know,
a lot of
idiots, so I don't know.
You're like, I don't know. You should meet my neighbors.
We have a lot of world-class universities and stuff here. That's true. It's the largest city in Canada. It ends up kind of being like, you know, because in America you have, obviously New York is kind of the central, the biggest city where a lot of things are centered around, but you still have like obviously Los Angeles and you have like Chicago. See, in Canada, it tends to just basically Toronto is just the biggest city by far. So a lot of things kind of are here, you know, and obviously not to downplay the importance of Montreal and the French culture, which is obviously important to Canada, but Toronto is the biggest city and kind of where everything happens.
Yeah. And it was definitely like I'm sure for most people their first time in Canada, it's like, okay, this is really where you have to go to get the best, maybe not the best, but maybe the most like culturally rich experience. And we definitely felt that way, man. It was cool. Cause I think almost every professor I had in grad school was actually, had studied in Toronto at a few different universities. And I think partially was because it seems like a trend for a lot of people to go from China to Toronto to study. And a lot of my professors were originally from China and seemed to study there.
Yeah, so, yeah. We definitely have a lot of people from China here. There's a lot of people from everywhere here, which is, which you're right. It does make the city unique and
that's cool.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah,
so.
That is. That's really cool.
Anyways, man, so you're talking about people my age and I know you graduated from grad school and you've got a master's degree and all this stuff. How old are you?
I'm 26.
Okay,
you're
26
a couple months
ago. Okay, yeah.
You,
it's interesting, man, because you got a bit of a later start, I feel, than most, you know, bands. And in some ways, I think that's kind of rad. Because, you know, most of the time when a band is writing their first record, you know, and they're like 17, 18, you know, how do I put this without sounding insulting? They kind of don't know anything yet. They're
totally.
You know what I mean? They're kind of idiots. And a lot of times the music or especially like the lyrics or the concepts that they're kind of going for, a lot of times they can be very immature and
totally.
They can kind of be not well thought out.
Just
because there's like a lack of understanding there. So what I think is so cool about Silent Planet and you, Garrett, is how kind of advanced, you know, you guys are coming right out of the gate with, you know, lyrically, conceptually, ideologically, like everything you're doing is, you know, it is very next level and very, I think it's great. Personally, I think it's really, really like a great, it's a step forward for what a lot of bands are doing. And I just wonder how much of that you think is because you guys were a little older when you got started.
Oh, absolutely. That is a huge part of it. Well, I think, you know, it's funny cause I know exactly what you're saying about the age thing because, when I was 19, I started Silent Planet and our first, both music and lyrics, I feel pretty embarrassed about. And
right.
It's a funny thing cause it's pretty hard to find. Like it's probably on some like file sharing site somewhere, but like, after when we started getting ready to put out our first full length with our label in 2014, I like realized that stuff was still on like iTunes, and I was like, you know, that doesn't really even help tell, like that doesn't really mean anything to us at all because it was a completely different lineup except for myself, and so it was just kind of like it would be one thing if it was all of us just 5 years younger, but like no one even had any connection to it besides me, and my connection was already pretty weak with it, so we got it off the internet pretty much, more or less.
That wasn't the EP that you made with Matt Goldman in Atlanta, was it?
No. So that EP, a lot of people would say, is our first EP, and I don't correct them because it feels that way. But we did do like an EP in 2010, and it was not not our favorite. And it's funny because those guys are still my friends that I was with that we first started Silent Planet with. But it was just a very different time, you know. And frankly, you know, looking back, we were, I think, where a lot of local bands are, where they're like, yeah, at the time, you know, the bands were, the Devil Wears Prada obviously was probably the main one. And bands would be like, hey, you know, let's do that. You know, there's not a lot of, originality. It's just like, you know, I see a lot of young bands today and they're, I was like, oh, you know, what do you like? They're like, oh, well, you know, we're like Being as an Ocean. And, you know, they just actually want to be Being as an Ocean. And really nothing more, nothing less.
Well, the biggest the biggest one from that era was Under Oath. I mean, everybody just wanted to be Under Oath. That's like, if you talk to Devil Wears Prada, you bring them up. I remember basically, you know, they were a local band in Ohio. They started getting big. And yeah, I was like, so what do you guys, you know, what do you guys listen to? They're like, Under Oath. It's like, what else? Mm-hmm. They're like, pretty much just Under Oath. I was like, just okay then, you know?
And it's funny you say that because we still feel that way, to be honest. Sorry, I cut you off. But yeah, we are still, as a band, we're probably like, yeah, Under Oath is definitely our favorite still. but sorry, continue on.
Well, there's something magical about Under Oath. I mean, I'm not definitely like there always was. And, you know, now that they're back together and everything, like, I, you know, I'm sure you probably caught them on the at So What. I don't know if you guys were there that day or the tour they did. Like, there's something very magical about that band to this day. And, you know, those things don't, like, those bands only come around like once in a decade, I think. And they're one of those bands, you know, like, I'd say probably the decade before was maybe like Refused, you know, the terms of, like, you know, hardcore bands or whatever. You know, they're rare. And I appreciate what you guys are trying to do, because I think you guys are, I don't think you're there yet. You have your second record coming, I think you guys are on the trajectory where you're at least trying to do something special. You know, and I just watched your video for Panic Room, which is, I mean, that's almost like a short film in a way, like the way it's shot beautifully. It's very intense. It's hard to not feel something when you watch that. And I understand that is about a friend of yours that is going through some PTSD from Iraq.
Yeah. Our friend Gerald, he told me a story when we were in the studio. And initially Panic Room was just going to be about panic attacks, because we have a friend who, some of the guys in our band actually have gone through panic attacks. And so the song was like pretty written. And then Gerald, we'd been talking, but he sent me this email and said, you know, I don't know why, I think the Lord wants me to tell you this. And he sent me this long email about his PTSD. And it was just one of those, I would call it like a holy moment, where I was like, this is the song. And so I did something that I hate doing, probably because I'm lazy, but I pretty much shoved everything off the table, rewrote the song to kind of reflect what he went through. And part of it was honestly kind of natural, because there is a lot of questioning nationalism and imperialism. And I guess the political, I guess you could say, overtones, is just something that I feel confident writing in. And it's something that I enjoy talking about, kind of the mix of personal and like meta narrative, you know? And so it was cool to be able to, just really connect with him on that and to try to tell his story. And it's created like a very deep friendship between us.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's been interesting.
You must know, I mean, from your studies and stuff, you must know a lot about PTSD yourself, just from learning about that, right? You know, in terms of psychology?
A decent amount, for sure. You know, there's all these different concentrations folks get into in grad school. And a lot of my cohort, and this is like a 6-year, like, okay, from the beginning to the end, we're going to be together doing our things until we get our PhDs. And so a lot of people in my cohort were going in to actually work with veterans. And obviously PTSD is one of the very main things that comes up when you work with veterans. And so from their stories, as well as I did see one student when I was doing, I was getting my hours, you know, and basically your therapist, the exception is once a week, you have to like talk about all your cases with an actual PhD so that they can actually give you guidance, which is a great thing.
Absolutely.
But it's a weird thing, because you kind of throw you out there and all of a sudden you're a therapist and you're not ready. You know, you're not ready and you feel bad, but you're like, I hope I don't ruin anyone's life. But anyways, one of the folks was working through PTSD. But for the most part, it was actually a lot of other mood disorders that come up on this new album that I probably heard more about. But it, so it's really Gerald's story of PTSD that made PTSD very real to me, because he was very explicit with me about what had happened. And I think I talked about it in one, like an explanation video kind of thing. But he told me explicitly like why he had to kill a young man, and how he still remembers it very well. And yeah, anyway, so that really kind of shook me up and kind of became the song. And it was kind of the weird song. And when we got home and we got the mixes back from Putney, I just kind of told the guys, I think that this would probably be a good one to put out first. Cause as weird as it is to say, or I don't hope this doesn't sound narcissistic, we felt like this was the most like Silent Planet song on the record, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. We just felt like this is really like a sound that I think people associate with us. And so we thought it'd be cool just come out with like one of the more like, maybe unique songs on the record. I don't really know how to say it.
No, I totally get what you're saying. Now I got to ask you a little bit about the video, because, you know, obviously you're telling someone's personal story.
Yeah.
And obviously it's your interpretation in some ways with the lyrics that you wrote.
Absolutely.
But then when you actually do a film, you're not, I assume you didn't direct or shoot the video. So was it really, was it difficult to try to explain that vision to the director? And how hard was that? Because that's always a problem when you make a video that...
Oh my gosh.
You know?
It's the worst. To be honest, like, we've worked in the past with cool video folks that we love working with. However, we kind of had this connection with Kevin. His name's Kevin Johnson. And
okay.
No joke. So Panic Room was his first music video. I feel like I should tell you that, because that's kind of like a wow fact.
That's big wow fact. Wow.
it was his first music video. Now, it was not his first time being involved in a video. Actually, it was probably his like 100th time being involved, because he'd been working under Aaron Marsh, Sons of Nero guy. You might have worked with him at some point or seen his name. And Aaron's incredibly talented. And Aaron was at the shoot of the video, but he was more so kind of helping out and really let Kevin take the lead. Because Kevin had reached out to me on our Facebook, which is funny because we don't do a good job of checking those. But for some reason, I opened it and it was like, hey, I helped shoot this video for For Today, and it was definitely our favorite video For Today I'd ever done. It's like called Bitter Roots, and they're like silhouettes with like green screen stuff kind of superimposed onto them. And
yep,
it was a bit more artful for For Today, and I told the For Today guys, like, easily our favorite video you'd shot. And so when he mentioned that, I was like, you know, it was weird. Like, we got on the phone and he really seemed interested in the details and in like how to tell the story. And with honestly only $4,000, he was able to make Panic Room happen.
That's
and that
amazing.
Involved me flying out to Georgia and flying back between two tours that we had. I had a little gap. So flew out there, and it was very collaborative. Like, a lot of these creative visuals were his idea. And I also had a few visual ideas, but mostly just overall narrative. And it was cool to feel like we really, really like felt and hurt each other. And Kevin and I are, I kid you not, like, he's texting me right now saying, hey, here's the new cut for this video that we're putting out in 2 days. And he's texting me right now about,
oh, great.
Getting
what song
back
is that
to him
for?
On that. It's called Orphan. And it's funny. We've actually been playing that song live for like 3 months now. We played it at So What Fest.
Cool.
And we've been playing that for a while, but, because it was maybe not the most traditional song, but definitely not the most unique song on the record, we wanted to like have it kind of be the last single we put out before the record. So yeah, so we're working on that. And to be honest, this song kind of scares the shit out of me as far as the video goes, because it could easily be misinterpreted and offend a lot of people. So we're
really
trying to very delicately, we feel like very delicately trying to work through this video. And so that it will show what we want to show. And obviously some people will see this and be offended no matter what. But the goal is to maybe not offend the most amount of people.
Well, can you tell me what the song's about and kind of what the video is? Because by the time this comes out, the video will be out, I guess, right?
Oh,
if you say it's 2 days.
Perfect.
So.
Sorry about that. I was talking about it in future tense, but we should be talking in past tense.
Well, yeah, it's always awkward. But no, I think this will come out pretty soon. But didn't you say you're going to put the video out in 2 days?
Yes.
Yeah. So it'll, definitely, What today is what? Today is Wednesday. So yeah.
Wednesday, yeah. Friday,
it'll be yeah.
yeah.
We'll be good. We'll be good. So okay. So the song is yeah. Orphan, and the video you say is going to offend people. Yeah. Please,
I think,
please
I
describe.
Think it will. So. I guess I'll start with the song. The song is about, I mean, I guess the first line of the song kind of says it. This first line of the song is respective perspectives, worshiping directives. And it's the idea that I personally have that when we see so much violence in the Middle East, and we see basically it's juxtaposing. The first half is about how jihad has kind of taking the forefront of people's imagination of Islamic culture, and about how mm-hmm. jihad involved more or less uprooting a lot of the more peaceful culture and kind of acting as a weed and kind of strangling things, and often involves really youthful, violent men kind of overtaking the elders and the culture that was there. And so right. the kind of the first half of the song is about that, and the second half is about Western imperialism. And I think one of the lines is harvesting destruction, reaping the sow from weapons we planted in the soil. And it's the idea that, which I think more and more people are starting to agree with. I think maybe 10 years ago in America, if you would have said this, people would be very angry. But I think people are starting to see that perhaps our interventionism isn't helping. And perhaps the way that our economy is fueled by our presence in the Middle East may have a negative impact on some of the people there.
yeah, you think? Yeah.
I try to say maybe because I don't want to be so bold as to right. like, tell everyone how to think. But, you know, I mean, even a lot of my friends who are pretty conservative are starting to move more libertarian because they're starting to think, well, maybe we can just, you know, be conservative economically, but not necessarily go to other countries and take their resources. But anyways, so I guess the song is about that, and caught in the middle of the song are these two brothers who in the song they're twins, and one becomes an Islamic radical and the other one becomes a peace activist. And at the end, he's captured and there's a hood over his head and he pulls it off, and the guy, the Islamic radical, sees his brother and realizes that he's about to behead his brother. And basically his brother says, like, you know, you can take my life, it was never mine, and kind of has a very peaceful response. I guess what I would consider a Jesus response of, like, I'm here to love you, I'm not here to hurt you, and says, you can take my life because my blood will sow peace. And so the song kind of deals with, like, would this violence be possible if we could actually see everyone as our brothers? So in the video, we went a slightly different direction, but basically, long story short, two men, one man is from the Middle East and one guy's from the West. And basically it's a perception creates reality situation where this man's mourning his family's loss and he's holding flowers. And then anytime you'll see the man from America looking at him, all of a sudden he finds a bomb in his hands. And it's this kind of terror of, like, this isn't me. I don't know why there's this bomb. And it's this kind of perception of this guy. And then you see these babies who are also, one has darker skin and one has lighter skin, and kind of see these babies looking at each other with wonder. And then you see these grown men looking at each other with fear and kind of, I guess, hopefully ask people the question, like, how do we grow backwards? And you know, to where, like, a baby would never assume this other baby's, you know, this intrinsically evil thing trying to kill us. But we so much fear is instilled in us by culture and by the world. So that's kind of the idea of it.
Yeah. That's,
sorry for the long winded
answer.
No, that's
fine. I mean, that's obviously very heavy, and, you know, in the wake of the Orlando shooting and
yeah.
everything. Yeah, I could see how that I'm sure it's going to offend people, and
yeah.
you're going to have to explain that, you know, probably.
Yeah.
And it's hard with imagery too, right? Because
it is,
you know, and you only have whatever, you know, the song's probably between 3.5 and 4 minutes long to kind of put everything in and still have, like, shots of you guys playing, you know, to try to describe, you know, this stuff visually. And
definitely
there's a
yeah.
challenge there, and hopefully people understand it. But, you know, I mean, hey, it's at least you guys are trying to say something, You know, going back to what I was saying earlier about you guys lyrically and stuff, and one thing I thought was really interesting too about your lyrics is how you actually reference, like you actually have footnotes in your lyrics where you actually reference what you're talking about in your songs, which, to be honest, I don't think I've ever seen that before. I mean, like, there's definitely been songs, like, I've read, you know, lyric books and stuff where people have kind of described it, you know, like, especially bands like somebody like Propagandhi, who are super political, you know, where they're gonna explain what it's the song's about and and put in brackets things. But to actually use numbers and footnotes, I thought that was really interesting. Is that something, was that your own idea, or did you get that from somebody else?
I think it was my own idea. I say I think because one day I might be looking at lyrics and be like, wait, I got it from him. But I don't honestly listen to like a crazy amount of artists. And so I don't think I saw it from anyone. I mean, I guess what had happened is as you were saying, we have a kind of unique path into this. And my path was strangely like, I meet so many guys who like are 25 and they're like finishing their tour life. They're like, I guess I'll go to school. And it's funny because I didn't start touring till I was like 24.
Yeah.
But I really always wanted that. Like, dude, I would watch videos of you guys on tour, of Under Oath on tour, of Devil Wears Prada, just different bands. I would watch your guys' tour stuff, or like look at you on Off Days at Warped Tour, go into like Shasta Lake where I grew up. And like, I like wanted that more than anything, like that deep kind of want that like you dream about it, then you wake up and you think about it, and it was just like really this desire. And so but anyways, sorry, it's kind of getting off track. I was in the institution, you know, and we would do papers and research stuff all day, and so it just kind of, I guess, started to make sense to when I was writing the lyrics, and you know, I knew that a lot of these things were references to things I'd read, or some of them were quotes. I was like, well, yeah, that'd be cool in a kind of concise way to footnote it, just like Chicago Turabian style in my papers.
No, absolutely.
So I think kind of nerdy, but
yeah. No, it totally makes sense with your background that you would do that, you know, put in whatever bibliography, you know, for lack of a better word.
Essentially what it is.
You know, into your lyrics, which is funny because I do that too. Like, you know, I have quotes and I have references to things, but I don't want people necessarily to know about all those references, because in a way, you know, music is supposed to be open to interpretation.
Very much.
You know, and obviously, like, especially with you guys, you know, the funny thing is, like, Silverstein, we're not a Christian band. I'm not a Christian. The amount of people that interpret our music as Christian, especially in the early days, I thought was really funny.
I remember like on like Pure Volume and stuff, people like debating if you guys were a Christian band.
Yeah, well, my favorite was songmeetings.net, you know that website?
I think
it's still there. It's not as active as it was, but I love that website because you could read the lyrics and then people would talk about, you know, their interpretation. Now, with your band though, don't you feel like you're losing that? You're losing the open to interpretation that people can take away from your music because you're being so obvious about what it's about? Or is that not really as important to you?
Well, it's funny you say that, because on this record, a slight difference that only I think the people who are like maybe super, super follow us and like maybe we're really into our last album will notice. But in our last album, I did a little bit more, and I kind of regret, of I would do a footnote, and there would be like a small paragraph of like, for instance, you know, we made a temple to thieves and enshrined the great criminal who promised us heaven without God. And then I made a small paragraph about how Joseph Stalin came over, you know, took power after killing many people, and then was kind of worshipped almost by his people for a while. And so I kind of explained that. Whereas in this record, the footnotes are still there, and there's even more of them, but it's mostly just like, more of just a bibliography, more of just like, I'll just reference the book that inspired it.
Right.
Because to me, that allows people to like do further reading and maybe like learn some stuff that I find to be very important. But I don't, like, especially like in the Orphan song, I talk a lot about American interventionism, but I don't really say like I'm talking about American interventionism, or I'm talking about, you know, the Iraq-Iran Contra scandal of 1977. I'll just more so like maybe reference the book, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
no.
Or maybe just the political event, but I won't really go into great detail about what was right and wrong, because I agree. I want people to be able to interpret still.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I totally get that, and that's a great approach, I think. There's just, for me, one thing I love doing is I love writing a line to where I'm not even sure which side I'm on. Like, you know what I mean? Because sometimes, you know, you're writing something and it almost has like a double or a triple meaning.
Oh, so much.
So
yeah.
So when you do that, when you footnote something, then you're almost like giving it away. You know what yeah. I mean? Because you're going to say, oh, it's this. When it's like really like maybe you could reference something or you could say a line that might be from two different books, you know, or yeah, two different yeah. books that are complete opposite. So I just found that stuff really, really unique and interesting. And I really enjoyed listening to your album and reading your lyrics, because I think it's
wow, thank you.
I think it's really, really like forward thinking and unique, which is awesome.
Thank you.
So
I
you know,
really appreciate that.
Oh yeah, thank you, man. No, thank you. But I wanted to go back a little bit. You were talking about how, you know, you're in school, you're, you know, kind of living this, you know, this existence where you're probably, you know, going to class, going home, working, you know,
yeah,
eating,
yeah.
sleeping when you can, and then yeah. sort of thinking about music here and there.
Yeah.
But you said you'd kind of dream about going on tour, and that was kind of like all you really wanted to do.
It was so, everything, honestly.
So how did that all happen? How did you get involved with playing music, and how do you find yourself now, you know, about to release your second album?
Can
tell me the whole story from the beginning until now, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, totally. Basically, I my whole freshman year, I'd like kind of met people at school who were musicians, because, you know, college is this crazy thing where you meet people from all these different backgrounds and all these very talented people. And I realized how very untalented I was when I went to college, because I was meeting all these people who were like really, really good at guitar, but they were just going to school for like molecular engineering or something crazy.
What school did you go to?
I went to a school called Azusa Pacific University. It is the second largest evangelical Christian school in America. And to be honest, I'm thankful that it's also probably the least, I think it's the least oppressive Christian school in America, I will say. Not to say that all Christian schools are oppressive, because there's a lot of really cool ones. But a lot of schools, you know, like require a statement of faith, and APU is like, hey, you can believe whatever you want to come here. And,
okay.
You know, and some schools are like just pretty much outright not okay with people being openly gay. And APU is like, that's fine, you know.
Right.
So I like that the school has no interest in babysitting adults and telling them what they should do with their life. But it is also still actively Christian, which is to say, like, they have theology majors and Bible majors, and they, you know, they have cool like mission trips where they say, hey, let's go build houses. So in my opinion, it's what a Christian school should be, where like they still practice their faith, but they also don't oppress people with it. So anyways, that little caveat.
I like the caveats. They're good.
I always got to give them a shout out. I really do appreciate that place. And I think that I have a lot of friends who are not Christians who went there, and we're also very stoked on it. And that makes me happy that it's being closer to what I think the Church of Christ should be. But anyways, so the, you know, studied and did that thing and started meeting talented people. And then one day got on Craigslist and met some other dudes. One of them had just got kicked out of Askin Alexandria, which was really random. And he was kind of salty about that and wanted to start a real rocking band to be as rocking as them, which we failed at probably. But, you know, met some different dudes and kind of had this mix of like some college kids who had no idea than some guys who were like more aware of how it went. And yeah, so did that for a while. And then after 2 years, everyone quit, like everyone quit. And I was pretty heartbroken. I'm sorry. One of the guys didn't quit. So Nathan and I kind of found some other dudes, including a kid who was, you know, trying to get away from home. And basically what I did is I became a resident advisor, which is like, you know, the RA, I don't know if you've heard of it. Basically you like enforce the school rules. But the reason I became it, I will admit, was because I got a free apartment and I had my whole band move in with me, which was totally against the rules. The whole point of being an RA, I kid you not, the whole point of being a senior RA was to make sure that people aren't like, you know, cohabitating with someone if they're not married, and like make sure that people aren't like just having people move in and have parties, but to, you know, to make sure that the student housing is for students. Sure. And I broke that one rule. Like I legitimately became what I had to become to break the rule, because I knew that if we could have a free housing, all these dudes who seem to be from Central California, like Bakersfield and Fresno and all those pretty tough places, were able to get out of it and come live in LA with me. So basically that's how it all like really started. And from there, we recorded with Matt. I graduated college. I went to grad school, but still had that kind of desire. And when I started grad school, we started doing small little tours and had this tricky little thing of like, I would fly home to take a test or like fly home to see some of my clients in therapy and then fly back for the show. And it was getting kind of costly on the flight thing, as well as it was just like, you know, we weren't like playing big shows. It was kind of silly to like fly back for a show and play for 20 people in like, you know, Amarillo, Texas kind of
right,
thing.
Right.
So it was just getting kind of like, okay. And so after 2 years, I got my master's degree and it felt like a pretty healthy jumping point to just stop doing full-time school, because I achieved something that I can go back with. Before getting into a bunch of doctoral work that potentially I can't really ever transfer or use anywhere else. So yeah, so kind of that was the jumping point. And along the way have met, honestly, dude, just very talented musicians. I'm not a musician. I don't know if I said that. Like I can play like three chords on a guitar terribly. I am totally not a Caleb Shomo person who like fronts a band, but is also very, very musically gifted.
You know, though, I don't believe you, man. That's not like to say you're not a musician because you can't play an instrument. I don't think that's accurate. You know, I don't agree with you.
I'm kind of curious,
because like, that would be like saying a rapper on the street, you know, that just claps his hands and raps and freestyles or whatever. I think that's a musician. You know what I mean? Just if he doesn't play an instrument, I think he's a musician. I think that what you're doing, basically making sounds, you know, with your voice and using literature and whatever and writing, that's music. That's the definition of music. So to say you're not a musician is kind of ridiculous to me.
Wow. Well, I appreciate it. I honestly haven't thought about that. The rap parallel is a good point though, because I definitely don't want to be the white guy saying that rappers aren't musicians, because I love rap. Like rap is probably the genre of anything that most influences a lot of what happens.
Well, I have to be careful too, because I'm making an assumption that like a rapper on the street doesn't play an instrument, which is a terrible assumption to make too.
No, totally.
Because there's a lot of rappers that are amazing musicians and are better musicians than me or even
especially
Caleb,
the new
even
wave
the
of
great
rap.
Caleb Shomo.
I don't know if I can say that.
I'm sure. But no, what you do by definition, you are a musician. But I mean, I'll ask you straight up, like, do you feel sometimes like you're basically a screamer, right? Like you don't do.
Totally. Yeah. The closest I get to singing is I kind of yell at notes here and there.
Right. So, you know, but do you feel like sometimes maybe you're, I don't want to say a fraud, but a little bit like you've pulled the wool over people's eyes to get in your position where you're the singer of a band, but you don't feel like a musician?
I think in a sense I have felt that before. However, from my side of things, it kind of keeps me in the place of humility that I want to be in, where like, cause I'm pretty open with people like, yeah, you know, like kids show me like their guitar covers of our band. And I'm like, you are infinitely more talented than I will ever be. And I mean that, I'm not just saying that to be nice. And the reason why I guess I'm happy to be in this position is like, for me, my faith in Christ is about humility and about, and it's so sad because I think above all the greatest like constant sin that I see in most like Christians' lives in America is I see a lot of pride, a lot of like, you know, we're going to tell people how to live their lives. And it's just, it's very far from the humility that Christ embodied. And I think that my lack of talent, I mean, kind of, you know, a lot of my favorite people who are in the Bible are these people who, like, you know, like a lot of people think that Moses had a stuttering problem and, you know, led Israel out of slavery, or Paul had like all these health problems, and it's just a lot of people that were kind of losers. You know, Jesus chose like tax collectors and like political radicals who were trying to overthrow the state, just people who like really weren't respectable. And so I do kind of take pride in the fact that, you know, I'm kind of a loser in a lot of ways musically, and that's okay. And I love, you know, my band always jokes about how terrible my timing can be, and it's so true. You know, typical like screamer dude. And it's, I just, you know, I'm very honored to be able to play with the musicians in my band, because I really do think our drummer is probably one of the best drummers a young person will ever see at a show. It's pretty silly, to be honest. I don't know how much you know about drumming. I do know that when this record comes out, a lot of people will say like, that guy. it's like, we're so blessed to be able to play with him, and our guitarist is an actual machine. The dude who I've been writing music with from the beginning, Spencer, is gonna, I do think he's going to write scores for movies that people will remember. And it's this crazy amount of talent, and I'm in the middle of it, just trying to sometimes be the coach and just keep everyone encouraged. Right. And, you know, we have a manager, but I would say I also do a lot of management work as well, and kind of, I think too much about merch, and I think too much about how our van's doing and or stuff like that.
Well,
so,
I mean, obviously what you bring to the table in terms of lyrics and ideas and concepts and everything, that stuff, I think I will argue that that's what makes Silent Planet special, you know? So, you know, because obviously like there people will debate, oh, is he the best drummer, or maybe this drummer's better, or can this guitar player like, you know, shred as hard as this other guy? Well, I don't know. You can talk about that forever, but I think what you're doing, you know, lyrically is special. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, don't be so hard on yourself.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I did read that your guitar player Spencer doesn't tour. Is that true?
Yes. Spencer does not tour with us.
How do I get that job, man?
this record was cool too, because this record was the first like very collaborative record from us. Previously, it was pretty much Spencer would write the music and I would write the vocal stuff. And this record, our guitarist who joined right after we finished writing The Night God Slept, is also very talented. He's one of those weird geniuses who, like, he taught himself Russian when he was 16 because he was, like, bored. And so, like, he speaks Russian really well and, like, speaks Spanish super well and is learning Japanese now and getting good at that. And we were in China and he was, like, picking up conversation. Just really, like, strangely gifted dude. And he joined the band and basically very quickly like figured out what makes us musically and started to like write within our paradigm. And that was the coolest thing, because you know how it is as a band. Like, a lot of times people are talented at writing their own version of what they think our music should be, but oftentimes don't really have the like maybe capacity or the patience to like say like, okay, well, I'm going to write as a member of Silverstein.
Oh yeah.
I'm not just going to write like what I think.
Oh,
well,
that's exactly
like
what happened.
Rock music should be.
That's exactly what happened with us when Paul Mark joined the band. He knew exactly what we were trying to do, and he had his own twist on it, but he was able to come in and write with us just like
good
nothing.
Silverstein songs.
Yeah, he knew what to do. So yeah. I totally get that.
Yeah, and so we have that now, and it's cool because this record, I would say, is pretty even between those two guys doing a lot of the initial writing, and then also our drummer really became so much more confident in his abilities, and I think is going to throw a lot of drumming in that will be new for a lot of people who listen to, I guess, metalcore. You know, and Thomas, our bassist, was way more involved too with a lot of it. So it was a very collaborative thing. And I think as a record, we're very aware that a lot of people will be like, wait, this record isn't quite as like metalcore with all the tapping stuff as we want. But as a band, we're very happy with it because we feel like it represents everyone, which is cool.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't find you guys to be like typical metalcore anyways. I find it's a little more like hardcore, even sometimes like post-hardcore-y like stuff. That's the vibe I get. I don't get the same... I don't know. I don't get like. I don't think you guys sound a lot like. I'm trying to think of a very metalcore band like. Shit,
like
I don't
As
know.
They Dying or
yeah,
I think
like that.
The common
or,
thing's Oh Sleeper. Like a lot of people say, like you know, that a lot of people I think thought that we wanted to be Oh Sleeper. If you're familiar with
of course
their music
I am,
at
yeah,
all,
of course.
And like we really like those guys. They're so cool. Like we got to know them as friends and did some shows with them, and they're really rad. But like. I think that their vision of Oh Sleeper and our vision of Silent Planet is quite different. And it's funny because we're both coming out with music. And I think that's really going to show. Because yeah. I think for a long time, we felt like people wanted us to do the Oh Sleeper thing. And we love the Oh Sleeper thing. But and we have some songs on our last record that you could easily say. That's pretty dang similar. But mm-hmm. I think you'll see like us kind of creating the sound that we want to be. But obviously along the way, people will be disappointed. And I'm sure you guys have seen more of that than I know. So, yeah. not disappointing people, but you guys have done what you felt like what was the right thing for Silverstein. And I'm sure a lot of people were like, no, you were supposed to be fill in the blank, you know? And
yeah,
now you're
sure.
being your own band.
Sure. I mean, you know, I think you've got to be your own band. I mean, I think mm-hmm. you can't worry about what other people are doing. You got to do what's right for you. And I think that's the approach you guys are taking.
I hope so. We'll see.
You guys are, you're home right now,
in
Southern California, and you guys are about to start the Warped Tour very soon. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. We are leaving in like 3 or 4 days cause we're playing a couple shows and then, yeah.
Have you done,
it starts on the 24th.
Have you done Warped Tour before?
No, we haven't. That's the other thing besides the Donald Trump Canada thing. I was going to ask you about Warped because, it's all very interesting because obviously Warped is, I feel, it seems like the real center place of our music scene because of, if nothing else, financially, how much money comes in and out. It's almost like, you know, everyone is at least aware of Warped Tour and has an idea of it, whether it's we want to play it or we don't, but everyone is kind of, I feel like Warped Tour seems to be almost like that central marketplace of our entire world.
I think a lot of people, like there's a lot of people out there, you know, especially various cities across America, like, you know, let me think of a city that's a good example. Like let's say Indianapolis. Warped Tour plays Indianapolis every year. Not that many tours go through Indianapolis, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, kids that basically they'll go to one show a year and it's Warped Tour. You know what I mean? So you have a lot of people that basically they go to Warped Tour every year and then whatever bands are there, those are the bands that they see, that they check out.
Yeah.
They buy
yeah.
their records. They become fans of them, you know, and you know, that's just a thing. You know, people know yeah. about it. It's been going on for a long time, which means it's just great exposure for bands because a lot of people don't go to every metalcore hardcore show
Absolutely.
That comes through their town. They just can't. They don't have time or whatever.
Definitely.
So it's great exposure. Have you've attended Warped Tour before?
Yes, I went when I just graduated high school in Kansas City. I was visiting family, and then we went a couple years ago because we were playing a festival in Minnesota on our own little tour. And the dudes in Florida Day were nice enough to guest list us. And so we saw kind of the behind the scenes a little bit,
yep.
but that's all. Like that's all yep. we know is this very limited scope. I know some of my guys have never been to Warped Tour, so
yeah, yeah. Well, it'll be an experience.
by
definitely.
The way, we're doing it in a van. I feel like I should just close.
Oh no, dude!
Just so that you understand,
are you doing the whole thing?
No, we aren't actually. We are. We're honestly, it's kind of this interesting thing where. We kind of thought a full thing was coming in, and then we got a partial thing. Still super grateful. And then I guess I think Kevin had spoken to someone in our camp and said that, you know, I'll keep an eye on them and I might be extending offers. So I guess it is possible it gets extended, but we obviously don't like expect that. So yeah, we're most likely just doing the first half.
If you guys are doing it in a van, I think just keep it to the half of the tour.
Keep it half. No, totally.
It's like, honestly, dude, like it's dangerous, man. Like it's dangerous. It's fucked up. I don't think, I know bands have done it in vans before, but getting through it without breaking up, having a member leave the band, or like actually dying in an accident. Like I'm not even being
No. I know I believe you.
You have to be careful because seriously, man, like you're gonna load in, you're gonna have to be there in the morning at like, I don't know,
like 7 a.m. right?
Yeah, because you're gonna have to, like, I don't know what stage you guys are on. I didn't check that, but
It's the small one. It's the it's called Full Sail.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure, but whatever. You're gonna have to be there early. I don't know if they have a truck to unload. We might have to help with that. I don't know, but you got to be there at 9 a.m. You know, the show ends at like 8:30, and then if it's an 8-hour drive, like when are you gonna sleep?
Well, that's the good thing. Is the one thing, because we're obviously just working within our means. You know, like a bandwagon, sharing a bus, kind of stuff was out of our means, because I guess it's one of those things where we've always been very DIY as far as like we are with a record label. However, like our record label does a great job handling the record and all the music stuff, but it's not one of those, like, you know, I've seen a lot of bands, including a lot of them on our stage, who like all of a sudden, like, you know, someone from a popular band noticed them, boom, you're on this label, here's a bunch of money, your first tour is with fill in the blank, and it's just kind of like, you know, big thing after big thing. And that's great for those bands, you know, but for us, it has always been just kind of a building process and, you know, working with what we got. And so, yeah, with Warped, we knew it would be tough because we are not going to get some like 10 grand, you know, recoupable loan from the label or something. And so it was like, well, you know, we're going to, we're going to have to sweat in a van, but we did hire a driver.
That's
because
good.
We can't afford that. So we all, hopefully we'll be tired enough, which I'm sure we will, to just boom, pass out, and then wake up in the next city and do it again. But yeah, I mean, if something goes wrong or the ride is really bumpy, there's a good chance that people will see us on stage looking like zombies.
Yeah, no, but halfway through, like when you're two and a half weeks in, oh, it's going to be rough. But you got to make friends with a band that has a bus, so you can You can go chill on their bus during the day, because
totally,
it's a long day to just be outside in the heat, or like running your van all day with the AC, like, have AC, you know?
Like, no, I mean, I haven't done Warped Tour, but I have done a lot of Hell Weeks in high school sports. And I am very aware that like, it is dangerous to physically be in the sun for 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely hope to, definitely, you know, praying that we meet some cool people on the bus, or that maybe it's the coldest summer of the history of the world. But yeah, like, no, it's definitely like, yeah, we are being the same band we've always been, in DIYing it. I will say, one summer we spent in Japan and China, and that was pretty gnarly and pretty hot, because in China we just were taking like hot trains the whole time. And crowded trains, and we were like walking our gear for a couple miles every day. So I think China, strangely enough, gave us a small taste of Warped Tour, but right, we'll see. I might be hitting you up and being like, never mind, China was paradise compared to this struggle. So we'll see.
That's super interesting that you guys have already been to China. Silverstein, we've never been to China. We've been to Hong Kong, and we have our first Chinese show in Shanghai. Maybe I can't talk about that.
Is it with Paul from Hot Pot?
I actually don't know.
Paul Huang.
I know we're going to China later this year.
Yeah.
That's totally all I know. But how did that come up with you guys so early in your career, going to China?
I guess that's kind of our band. Like I was saying, like, I mean, we didn't get a manager till like, you know, a lot later than a lot of bands, and label kind of later. And so pretty early on, I realized that like, if our band was going to function, we had to learn how to do everything. You know, we had to learn how to make our own good shirts, and we had to learn how to market ourselves and not really be a band that like just kind of gets lifted, but we had to learn how to climb ourselves, you know? And so one of those things was, as far as getting tours, like I would just straight up like hit people up and be like, dude, I'm sorry to punish you, because I know that bands do this all the time. But, you know, here's our stuff. And it did help us. The dudes in Four Today, who, in my opinion, are definitely of the metalcore bands we've met, some of the more musically inclined and just interested artistically in different bands, they listened to us and they were like, dude, like we're into it. And they took us on like a 5-day tour and then the different 13-day. And then finally they took us on a headliner. And stuff like that just kind of came from like, you know, I would be working merch for other bands, and the guys in a band called Phineas have helped us so much when we were like, I mean, dude, one time we were touring and they let us hop on their tour and gave us half their guarantee every day.
Wow.
So we each got $100. And, you know, like when we're on tour, dude, we only call for free food. Like we don't buy food. Like everything is free, like for food, and we stay at people's houses, and
yep,
we've just learned how to be as cheap as possible. And I know that you know these things, but I'm guessing a lot of listeners might not know that.
No, that's, I mean, how you used survive. I used to eat Taco Bell 3 times a day because that's all I could afford.
Totally, you know?
Totally, absolutely.
Just to get the dollar burrito, dollar taco.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But sorry, you went to China with Four Today, or?
Oh no. That was just kind of another pretty DIY thing. I think we hit up, I'm trying to think of how I got his contact info. I think it might have been Tyler from Beings in Ocean. I got his contact info and just hit him up, and he was like, well, you know, we can help you pay for flights, but you got to play like 11 shows. And we found out quickly that that's a lot of China. And it's China's exhausting if you do it the way we do it, because you're carrying all your gear, you get on a train, everyone's kind of staring at you, and China is, I tell people all the time, the opposite of Japan. Like I couldn't think of two more
That's
different cultures. And like they the people in China are they're kind of, you know, they're in your personal space, and you feel like everyone's staring at you, and you know, obviously our countries are so different because they've remained somewhat closed off. So it was a very interesting situation, but that, like a lot of things, just kind of came from taking risks and sort of doing it way DIY. And it's funny because it's totally like trial by error. You know, like at the end of that tour, my band was looking at me like, dude, you're an idiot. Like, I mean, we had a great time, but we were also like, wow, that was like, we weren't prepared, you know, for what that would look like. And you know, it's always been this interesting thing. And when we went to Japan, the guy just never paid us. And we were like, oh, bummer. And we're kind of just sitting in Japan, like calling our parents saying like, hey mom, can you loan me $500? Because, we don't have enough money for this like baggage thing. Cause these people just charge us $2,000 to get on the plane. Like it was just highway robbery, but we were like,
oh yeah, the baggage thing.
What are we gonna do? you know how that is. They weigh everything.
We have cases. We've had like cases. We have our cases built so that whatever's in them and the case weighs 50 pounds.
Oh, wow.
So
here's the thing. It's funny because we do that for America, right? But when you go to some of these really sketchy airlines in the Asian countries, they will just make you weigh everything, including your carry-ons, your backpacks and everything. And you weigh everything, and it's a flat fee per per kilogram.
Yep, we've had that happen to us before. One time we had to cancel. I forget where we were. I feel like we were in Russia. Actually, we had to cancel the flights.
Dude, you've done Russia?
Oh, we've done it 3 times.
Holy crap! That's a dream. We've been in the Moscow airport, but we haven't actually done Russia. That's awesome.
No, it's great. I love Russia. I forget what it was, but it ended up being cheaper for us to cancel our flights and book other flights that had baggage allowance included on a different airline than it would have been to pay, you know, to take all our gear. So
no, totally.
People don't always understand like what you have to go through when you're, you know, flying to other countries. It can be crazy.
Oh dude, it is. And it's funny you say that, cause it was almost comparable to cancel and book with someone else. However, we had a show in Shanghai the next day, and we knew that we probably weren't going to get paid if we didn't play all of our shows. So we were like, we just did it, but it was over like $2,000, and it was just like, I don't think I've ever felt like that cheated before.
I'm shocked that you got ripped off in Japan, because Japan is so on top of things.
Well, you know? It was because it was a sketchy China airline. We were in Japan, but we were in the airport, so it was like, you know, it was very much it was in their control.
But I thought you meant like the promoter in Japan didn't pay.
Oh,
you.
No, yeah, he did rip us off. He didn't pay us. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really weird for Japan. They're usually like so on top of.
It was hard to explain. Like, he was a really nice guy, and when we're not recording, I can tell you who it was, but he was really nice. And it's funny though, because you'll actually see this like straight, it just happened with them. Like, a lot of bands will be announcing tours with him, but because of what happened with us, they will hear word of it. And I've had a lot of bands hit me up and say, hey, you know, so-and-so in Japan, will he pay us? And I'll just tell him the truth, which is he's the nicest guy ever. But at the end of the tour, like, he'll have you promise money and he'll say, sorry, I don't have it. And so that happened with Stray. They announced the tour, asked for all their money up front, and then the guy just didn't pay, and so now they're canceling it. And I've seen like five different bands have to do that in Japan, and it's a bummer because we want to get back to Japan, but like, we can't afford that to happen again. And it's an interesting situation. Also, there's a language barrier, so sometimes there could just be some misunderstandings, you know.
That's true. That's very, very true. Very, very true.
Yeah, I don't want to be the Americans who like claim that we have it all figured out, because, and not, don't get me wrong, like, the dude in China who I'm guessing you're going through, Paul Huang with Hot Pot, is like the coolest guy ever. Actually, it's funny, he's never been to America, but he speaks, or any Western country, but he speaks English perfectly, and he like paid us like boom, like the moment we got there, and was just like so cool, so professional, and like helped us navigate stuff, as well as his tour manager Stan.
Great.
And I, oh my Lord, I hope you meet Stan. I hope he's your tour manager, because he's this funny, foul-mouthed dude who's like the sweetest guy ever. So
nice. Yeah. No, anyways, that's for us, you know, at this point in our career, that's one of the things I think that we enjoy most about being in a band, is going to other countries and experiencing all the other cultures. That's for
isn't
us,
it amazing,
that's a
dude?
Really important.
It is
thing.
Such a gift, man. I'm so glad that you guys still enjoy that, and that it's, because I feel like some bands lose that wonder, and I'm glad that you guys still have that like kind of awe.
No, if
really
I hear
cool.
another band complain that they can't use their fucking cell phone or something, like, shut up. Like, you know what I mean? You're
dude,
an amazing, like, you know, like, go see the culture, go see some art. Do something, you know. Don't worry
that you can't
like post on your Snapchat. You know, your.
Hey, no,
God.
Dude,
so, anyways,
it's a gift. They don't even understand it at the age they're at, probably. But like, it's a gift that their phone's not working, and that like they can either sit there and pout, or they can go like ride bikes around Vienna. So,
exactly, man. Exactly. Well, hey, Garrett, new record is coming out July 1st.
July 1st.
Everything was sound. You guys are on the first half of Warped Tour, at least.
Yes, sir.
On the Full Sail stage, so make sure everybody checks them out. Thank you so much for taking the time. Again,
thank you.
I really like what you guys are doing. You know,
thank
I think you,
you
guys
Shane.
Are
Appreciate
really pushing,
it.
Pushing, you know, some boundaries and moving forward with music, and especially like, you know, metalcore music. So it's a really,
thank
really
you,
good
man.
Thing. And thank you very much for talking to me today.
Dude, Shane, thank you so much. I definitely have followed your podcast for a little while, and it's cool that you it's cool to be had on here, because I know that we're probably not the most popular band to be represented.
Well, you will be now
podcast,
when
so.
Everyone hears this. No, it's
yeah,
Garrett. Thank you, man.
So much,
thank
man.
You very much.
Yeah.
Anything else to say before I let you go?
No, yeah, just thanks
we covered
for
it all.
If y'all made it through an hour of my croaky stoner sounding voice, I appreciate it, and love you all.
That's what the screaming does.
It really does, I swear.
All right, Garrett. Yeah, you have a great day, man.
Hey, dude, you too, Shane. Thank you so much.
So there it is, my conversation with Garrett Russell of Silent Planet. Such an amazing story, amazing person, so unique. Make sure, if you guys are going to Warped Tour, do not miss Silent Planet. I've heard they put on an absolutely incredible show. They're on one of the smaller stages, so you might have to dig around and find out where it is. But I expect some big things from that band moving forward. So definitely check them out now. Get in on the ground floor, and you will be rewarded. Monday, we will be back with another episode of this podcast. As always, make sure you're subscribed. I know some people are listening to this on like SoundCloud or, you know, some weird website. Go onto your podcast app. If you're on iPhone, it's already there. It's already on your phone. You can't even delete it. So it's there. Make sure you're subscribed. If you're not on an iPhone, if you have an Android or whatever, There's a great app called Overcast, actually. That's a really, really great podcast app. That's my favorite. So check that out as well. But make sure you're subscribed. It helps us out, you know, growing our chart position and all that. Also, if you want to write a review on iTunes, that will totally help us out as well. So thank you very much again for tuning in. As always, I will leave you with a song from this week's guest. Here is the, well, there's a video for it. Check it out. It's a bit controversial, as Garrett and I talked about, but here is Silent Planet with their new single, Orphan, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love.
Respective perspectives, ways of being directed. Blindly killing for our dogma, until our sons meet in the garden. Torches, salt, the night guard. Till you rise up and set their elders to the gallows. Fire and the lighthouse. All our advances spark away from complication.
The bottom of the sea, and I'm fighting the bottom.